Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Matt Cohen and Brendan Creasy, Fagged and Boarded.
What up? I am Matt Cohen.
What?
You don't even let me fucking the first words out of my mouth. You're already jumping.
I didn't get to say what's up.
I was gonna give you your shot, man.
I'm sorry.
I wasn't gonna fucking steamroll over and be like, I'm the only one talking tonight. There's another dude at the table, but pay no attention to him. Though his shirt is fucking up. Brendo's wearing a shirt right now. For those of you who can't, by the way, folks, welcome to Bagged and Boarded. Thank you for being here tonight. For those of you who can't see, and of course I'm referring to the blind, Brendo is wearing a shirt with a bunch of cartoon characters, and it says "Cuteness Overflow." Brendo, you are a cuteness overflow. Is this part of the gay transition?
I don't know. I thought it was funny.
How long ago did you buy that shirt?
Like last week.
Post being gay.
Yes.
Would you have bought that shirt pre coming out of the closet?
No.
Okay, so you were in a store and you're like, "That looks gay."
It was actually shirt.woot.com.
Shirt. Well, giving them a plug, trying to get some free shit.
Maybe.
Send them all the gay. Send him gay shirts. Shirt.woot.
Totally.
Like if you got a shirt with a fucking unicorn cuddling a kitten, and it says like "Sweet Attack," send it his way. If you've got like
you should submit that design. They take it's all user submitted.
Should
designs.
I should create a gay line of shirts just for you, man.
Like it could be gay shirt woot.
Gay shirt woot.
Yeah,
that was pretty creative. I'm gonna spend all my time just crafting shirts to help you further come out.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
That'd be awesome.
Like one with like a real cute sparrow and he's got like a birthday party hat on and he's like, it's my party, ?
Yeah.
Like I feel like that's kind of gay. You know what I mean?
All right.
I mean, I'll admit I have some gay shirts. I have a 90210 shirt that on the back says West Side Forever.
Yeah.
When I lived in Manhattan, thank you. Yeah, it's a badass shirt, right? When I lived in Manhattan, the nostalgia value of it was like, oh, that guy's fucking. This was before the hipster thing, so that was like, that guy's ironic, and I like him. I want to talk to him and ask him if he like
instead
knows
of,
about Samuel Beckett.
Instead of like, you're being ironic, and I hate you.
Yes,
like,
exactly. So now that I practically live in Beverly Hills, whenever I wear that shirt, I think people just think I'm a tourist. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I had that, even going gayer, I had a Beverly Hills 90210 bedspread as a child. Well, here's the thing with 90210, folks. I wasn't allowed to watch it. I was born in 1984. Brenda, when were you born, sir?
1980.
Oh, you old motherfucker. How's AARP? You talked to Wilford Brimley lately?
Oh, yeah.
And did he tell you where the skeletons are buried? Because that dude has killed a lot of drifters, I feel like.
He told me to watch out for my diabetes.
Your diabetes? Only he can get away with that. So I was born in 84. You were born in 80.
80.
And why? Wow, shit. Look, it happened already. Marijuana. Just marijuana. I forgot what we were fucking talking about, dude. Why was I born in 1984?
I don't know. You're talking about 90210 bed.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So when I look at that, he brought it all home. 1984, I was born. 90210 came on the air in what, like
89.
So when it came on the air, I was like, fucking
love that show.
I'm gonna do the math. I'm gonna do the math real quick. 5 or 6.
Yeah.
I'm bad at math. And 90210 came on, and I wasn't allowed to watch it.
I watched it with my mom.
Right on, your mom was more permissive. Well, then that's not true because my mom is a fucking massive stoner.
I know.
My mom's just an asshole, I guess.
I think my mom gave
like she
up
was getting
at some
high
point.
And being like, yeah, the kid wants to watch a show and I won't let him.
I think my mom just...
I love 90210. Dylan McKay is my favorite. Hey, Matt, how'd you like 902? Oh, I'm sorry. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But so I used to sneak it and eventually she let me watch it and.
Where did you start? Donna Martin graduates? Season?
I have no. I was about to explain it. I watched 90210, and here's the thing. I watched it for fucking to get in with the ladies, man.
Oh, okay.
Because the girls,
that's actually a pretty good
the girls
strategy.
Watched it. It's like the Sex and City thing, which I didn't do because that's just too fucking.
I watched it just.
I was like,
liked
look,
it.
If I have to watch Sex and City to get laid, I will be fucking Rivers fucking Cuomo celibate for the rest of my fucking life.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna get a guitar and shit and like some smart glasses.
Yeah.
That's the guy's name, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't he celibate for a while?
I don't know.
Yeah, everyone knows that, right? Yeah, everyone knows that shit. But so 90210, I was trying to impress the
girls. And you're singing like Beverly Hills.
No, it was one of those things I did like.
That's where I wanna be.
No, thank you. I'm an arbitrary dude, and I do shit to fit in, or I used to at least. Like, I'm a fish is. I just accidentally pocket dialed Guillermo Diaz. Say hi, everyone. You know what fucked up? If that wasn't a famous person, I probably wouldn't have shared the name. So fuck me. He was on the show. It counts. He's a friend of the family. When 90210, I tried to impress the girls, but here's the thing, and it's my arbitrary nature. Like, when I was 16, I got heavily into pot.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd been smoking for a while, but I was like, this is a lifestyle now. And everyone was like, shut up. And I'm like, no, it's a way of life. Fuck you. So, I realized that Fish was like, all my stoner friends were going to Fish concerts, and I didn't know anything about Fish or jam bands. I'd never really been into music. Like, I'd listened to music, obviously.
Yeah.
Like in the elevator and shit. And at the dentist office, that one song that's like, turn around. I heard that a couple times. But so I was like, Fish, that's the group to get into. And before I had heard a single Fish song, and this is embarrassing to admit, I went out and bought like the 500-page Fish compendium book and like learned everything there was to learn about the band before I had even become a fan of them.
Oh, yeah, dude. I know. How.
So it was like, I'm going to be a Fish. It was a foregone conclusion. Like, okay, I'm a Fish fan now. Just the music will come later, I guess. It was the same thing with Beverly Hills 90210. Like, I watched it for the sake of watching it so I could be like, yeah, Brendan and Branda, or what, the Walshes. I don't see, that's the thing.
Brenda and Brandon. You thank like you. Reversed it.
Literally. I only had the bed sheets to tell chicks I had the bed sheets.
I got to say something real quick.
Go for it.
Fuck Brandon Walsh, because for the rest of my life after that show, people will always call me Brandon. And
what's
that
your
pisses
name?
Me off. My name is Brendan.
What's your last name?
Creasy.
For up until about 3 months ago, and I've known you for like 5 years, I thought your last name was Casey.
And it's still in his phone.
I've never changed it, but I did. At one point, I added Creasy, so now when he calls, it says Brendan, Casey, or Creasy. But no, I just added the question mark for effect. No, but I had 90210 bed sheets, and I remember being like, okay, you have to like this show because this is what the girl's like. This was like post Zach Morris, so it was like, okay, you're done with being Zach Morris. Now you have to be Dylan McKay. It like that translated to different stages of my life. So I would lay there at night, and what it was the bed sheet was different graphic logos. One of the show, one of the Peach Pit, I think. One of like a Cadillac or something.
Yeah.
And then the pillow was literally a cameo shot. Not a cameo. I don't know how to describe that. A panoramic shot of all the cast members.
Yeah.
And what I would do every night was I would speed memorize. I'd go, Brendan, Dilla. See, I can't even remember their names.
Dilla?
I would go, Dilla, yeah. I would go, Brandon, Brenda, Kelly, Andrea. Like, I would go, see, you go as quick as I can to try to memorize their names as fastly as possible.
Is that part of your OCD behavior?
I think so. That, and I love pussy. So I like 90210. Man, you know what I was thinking about? This might be kind of apt tonight. If you could go back in time, what would you do? One thing I would definitely do is try to have some more sex before I got bald. Not that like it's dried up entirely, which it has, but I make no effort. And I feel like, here's the thing. It's possible to have sex as a bald man, but you need to work a little harder. And I'm a fucking stoner, so like...
I know what I would do.
What would you do?
I think I would have gone back to Brendan in 90210. Brendan in 1989, watching 90210 with his mom, and I would have been like, "Dude, you're gay."
You would have told like a 12-year-old kid he's gay.
Yeah.
Like some big, scary, giant, redheaded man fucking busts in the room, and your mom's like, "Oh my god, who is it? Call the cops!" He's like, "Shut up, lady. You're fucking gay."
Yeah.
Enjoy 90210, homo. I'm jumping back in my fucking pink time machine. Brendo out.
Yeah. Totally.
Toads. That would have been your move. See, like, I don't know, man. There's the bald thing, but that's selfish. Here's the thing. You can't fuck with the time continuum. Everyone
that's
knows
true,
that.
But you could fuck with people. Well, just not, a little bit.
Well, it's not... What would you do? Like, what do you have some weird plans in your head?
I don't know. Like, I'd go back in time and, like, because, you know, like, we don't know what would happen if you killed Hitler. But, like, maybe I would just, like, fuck with him a little bit.
Like, okay, here's what it is. Here's what it is. I got it. All right. I got it right now, dude. I got it right now. Okay, and, A, okay. I should be saying that because I'm Jewish. You should go back in time and kill, like, St. Patrick? I don't know any Irish people. The potato famine guy. That was a guy,
yeah,
right?
I would have killed the potato
Some
famine.
Some guy was like, I'm taking all the potatoes. Enjoy the rest of the winter, arseholes.
I would be like, no!
So no, man, I would, here's the thing we would do. Okay, we couldn't kill Hitler.
No.
Because that, on a selfish level, I like having a show at the Smod Castle. I like getting to have cool guests on and fucking whatever. I like my life right now. I like my dog. I like the current crop of new television shows.
Yeah. Totally.
Things are good. Things are good. So you can't fuck with the time stream. So killing Hitler would irrevocably ruin time, basically, because who knows? I would probably never be born. You know what? Every single fucking thing. Like, let's go to the Star Wars analogy. If C5, what's his name? R5-D4?
Yeah.
If R5-D4, the little red and white droid, didn't have a fucking faulty, whatever it is, vapor fucking condenser.
None of that would have happened.
The Empire would have fucking won. So, like, we can't fuck with time,
exactly.
Man.
Exactly.
But, so we can't kill Hitler, but here's what I think we can do, Brendo. I think we can't even stop Hitler from starting. We have to let Hitler kill everyone he killed. We have to let all of time happen exactly how it happened.
Exactly.
So our only choice is really this. It's like 1943.
Yeah.
Hitler's fucking peaking.
Yeah.
Like if he were a band, he'd be so hot right now.
So we like time travel to the Eagle's Nest.
Okay,
right?
Check it. Yes. Exactly. Exactly, dude.
Yeah.
We go to the fucking Eagle's Nest. We time travel like Hitler's got a bedroom, and I'm sure he's got guards outside of it and double guards, and at night...
So we land inside the bedroom.
Chill a second, man. Chill. Jesus fucking Christ. Chill.
Okay.
So he's got, like, guards and double guards and triple guards, and he's like, I'm going to sleep now. Do not disturb me. I need my beauty rest. You know, like, this mustache doesn't grow itself, you know? So, like, they let Hitler go to sleep. He's got his little nightcap on and shit with a little... fucking eagle sticker on the top or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, he's like, would you bring me a glass of warm milk? Thank you. Leave it outside the door. So whatever. They go for the night and the guards are doing their thing. They're smoking cigarettes, doing what Germans do. I don't know, killing Jews. Or thinking about killing Jews at that point.
Yeah.
So we land in the fucking Eagle's Nest and Hitler's like, oh my God, what is this? What is this? Here's what happens.
What happened?
I'm like, what the fuck is up, Hitler? I'm Matt Cohen, a Jew. See this guy? He's gay. And now he's going to rape you while I watch.
Yeah.
You then have sex with him. See how excited you are? I'm not going to touch him or anything. So this is all on you. You hold him down.
Yeah.
Have your way with him.
Yeah.
And I'll like take pictures and laugh.
Yeah.
I'll be like, oh, you like that, don't you, Hitler? And here's the thing. Here's why we can rape Hitler and get away with it. He's not going to tell anyone.
No way.
So like... Hitler's gonna go through the rest of his year of life, like with a fucking little quiver in his lip every time he sees like a redhead or thinks about the Jew. You know what I mean? And he can't tell a soul because that's like his.
And it torments him.
And it's fucking like that's why he eventually kills himself in the bunk, dude.
Holy shit!
We did go back in time, and you did fuck Hitler.
Yes.
Like, way to go, us.
I know, right?
That guy. You know what I mean?
Like, you're welcome, world.
Fuck yeah, you're welcome. Ava's like, why are we killing ourselves? I thought things are going good. He's like,
the redheads are coming to get me.
He's like, I can't tell you mein Liebchen, but it involves a ginger and a Jew, and I don't want to live anymore. It's just Hitler taking really cold showers for like weeks on end and shit. And fucking Goebbels is knocking on the door, and he's like, mein Führer, it's time for the rally. And he's like, give me 10 more minutes, please. He's, oh, just sobs and shit. But at the same point, we would see, it's a double-edged sword, because yes, like, it wouldn't be awesome. Hitler wouldn't enjoy being raped by you, I don't think.
I don't think so.
But at the same point, I would reinforce the stereotypes about Jews, because on his deathbed, he'd be like, I told him the Jews were fucked up. This one time, this thing popped out of midair in the middle of my room, and this bald little elven Jew came out. And he made fun of me, and then this big guy put his Staffenstucker in me. I was right all along. He's like, watch out for time machines. That was his final message. And like everyone's like, what were Hitler's last words? And he's like, watch out for time machines. And everyone's like, what? Maybe he should have killed himself. He was losing it towards the end there.
Yeah.
And then the guards are like, Hitler, we brought you milk. And like, we're like, you don't fucking tell a soul about this, Hitler. We'll come back and do it again. Bitch, and you smack him in the face a little bit, and then you kiss him
because
you're a generous lover. And then we roll out, and the guards are like, "Mein Führer, I brought the milk," and he's like, just leave it outside. Like, dude, we would destroy Hitler's ego and psyche.
Totally.
We should get working on that technology, I feel like.
How do you know I'm not doing that right now?
That's what you do in your daytime. You're like, yeah. People at work are like, hey, Brendo, what are you doing? You're like, I'm building a time machine to fuck Hitler. They're like, oh, nice. A, that's amazing. You know how to build a time machine. B, you're going to fuck Hitler up. You're like, nah, I'm just in and around the ass. They're like, what? You're like, yeah. I'm gonna anally violate Adolf Hitler. What? You have a problem with that? I can't see anyone being like, that's wrong.
Yeah.
Don't rape Hitler. Hey, don't rape Hitler. You know what I mean? I feel like all fucking rules go out the window when it's Hitler time, kind of.
Yes.
Imagine if that dude was alive today. I just feel like he would have such a tough time of it. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of animosity and shit towards him. Like...
I think it'd be like on The Simpsons and like hiding in Rio or somewhere.
You know how like celebrities can't go like food shit? Hitler couldn't go anywhere, dude.
No.
Hitler, can you imagine trying to be Hitler?
That'd be horrible. Like he goes to buy groceries and he's just like, hello, I would like
a head of lettuce and some halva. Like he's trying to reach out to the Jewish community. So he always sneaks in one kosher item. He's like, and five bratwurst and egg and onion matzah? And they're like, fuck you, Hitler. He's like, but I'm 110 years old. And they're like, imagine if like Hitler's alive today and he's immortal. Like, that's... And then for like hundreds and hundreds of years, people are just like, fuck that guy. Yeah. And he's like, I wish I could die.
That would be a good punishment.
So that's the better part of it. You rape him once in like 1943, and then he lives like the next, like the entire human, it's Hitler sitting on the fucking rubble of like all of human existence and shit. Like Manhattan's burned down to the ground, and Hitler's like sitting there staring at the fires, and he's like, I hate life. You know what I mean? Totally. He's like, 60 years ago I got raped, and like it hasn't been good since. Like, you know what? I'm starting to feel bad for Hitler, actually.
No.
No?
No.
All right, I guess not. I mean, I've never been raped by you, but I can't imagine it. Look, and then I'm not saying you're not an... I'm not saying I don't... Like, people shouldn't want to have sex with you, but rape is an angry, violent thing. So no one should want to be raped by you. I just feel like that would really ruin Hitler's day.
But that's what we want.
That is what we want. Who else would you want to fuck with in time, man?
I don't know.
Who else, like... Isn't that fucked up?
I think I would fuck with some of the guys that, like, beat me up in elementary school.
What would you do to them?
Well, like, okay, you know in Little Monsters when he, like, puts the piss instead of his apple juice? Like, shit like that. I'd do that shit all the time.
You're like, I would do shit from movies I liked as a kid.
Yes.
You're like, I would just watch movies and do shit.
Yeah.
Like, what else would you rock, man? You're like, I would fucking enter a video game competition.
Oh, yeah.
And my rival would have a power glove. And there'd be a little kid who doesn't talk, and a kind of hot-ish older sister character.
Yeah.
And a dinosaur at one point that we go into. What else you got for me? What else would you do to the bullies?
I would... it all involves, like, somehow getting them to drink piss.
Really?
Yeah.
That's all you can think of?
Yeah.
That's like the high, that's like the lowest of the low in your book?
Well, when you're nine, like, that's your...
Yeah, but you're not nine anymore.
Okay, well, it was all the things I wanted to do when I was nine, but I was too scared to do.
You just wanted to, like, every day you were like, no, I just wish I could make them drink my piss.
My brother and I had
this... That's all I want in the world is for them to drink my dirty piss.
My brother and I once had this master plan where we were going to dump pee on all the bullies. And so we literally had, like, an empty Sparklets bottle up by our... Because we had two rooms and a balcony... And we had an empty Sparklets bottle up on the balcony and we would pee in it every day. And so there's this bottle of piss on our balcony. And we kept calling like the bullies. We'd be like, hey, we'd call like, hello, is this Matt? Like, you should come over to my house.
Call me.
I'd be like, ring, ring, ring.
Yeah, hello.
Hey, Matt, what's up?
Who the fuck is, how old are we?
Like 10.
Who the hell is this, man?
This is Brendan Creasy. I've got the new...
you mean that fat... Oh, you mean Greasy Creasy?
Yeah.
Greasy Creasy, Greasy Creasy. Hey, Terry, Greasy Creasy's on the phone. Get a load of this. What do you want, Creasy?
I've got the new Super Mario Brothers 3. You should come over to my house.
So do I, asshole. It came out like 2 years ago. Click.
Oh.
Boom, you lost the bully. Outwitted.
We got to the point once where they were almost coming over, and we had the pee, and we were holding it over... We were like waiting for them to
come over. How long did the pee sit there for?
Oh, like a long time.
Like over, like months and months?
Yes.
Did your... And your mom was never like, boys, well, is that a science experiment?
It wasn't a balcony you could go out on. It was like a fake balcony. Like it had gravel on it. And so nobody ever went out there.
So there was just a jug of pee fucking...
Yes.
Sitting in the hot California sun for months on end.
And we ended up accidentally...
Well, yeah, I was going to... What happened to the end of that jug? Well, where did that jug go?
We were holding it out because we thought they were coming over and I accidentally let it go and it just went all over the driveway. And my dad got home and he's like, why does it smell like pee out here?
You're like, yeah, fuck you, driveway. Never condescend me again.
It was very anticlimactic.
I mean,
and I'm like, I don't think we thought this through.
I mean, no, you really thought it through. You were pissing in a fucking jug of sprinklets every day for months on end. Well, were you tortured as a kid with like piss or something? Like you use piss as a revenge, like as a weapon.
It was from, like, because, okay.
It's like Captain Planet. I'm like, Earth, Wind, and Brenda was like, piss. And they're all like, what?
I don't know. What am I?
Like the song stops, and they're like, whoa, 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 we got to have a talk. They're like, we're not combining for shit until we figure this out.
One of my favorite movies as a kid was The Boy Who Could Fly. And there's at the end of the movie, Fred Savage finally gets back at the bullies by filling the squirt guns on his big wheel with piss. And he's like, this is piss, assholes. And he just squirts them with it. And I was like, yeah.
But you live in a world where like, let the right one in exists, where the kids get back at the bullies by murdering them with vampires.
At the time, that did not exist.
We're not in that time anymore, man. We keep going over that. Like,
I wouldn't go back and kill them.
Okay, I'm not saying you should. You always have, look, you have the murder option, the rape option, which we've used with Hitler. But then it's like weird pedophilia. We don't like that on this show, Brendo. Yo, do not go back in time and rape the bullies.
Okay.
You do me that favor. I will find a co-host like that. That shit does not fly around here.
Okay.
Hitler's okay. No one likes Hitler.
Yeah.
But they're just kids, the bullies, Brendo. Yeah. Stick with the piss. You're right.
Yeah.
It's fairly innocuous. You know what I mean?
Or I would like frame them for like horrible things. Like, I don't know.
like what?
Like,
this guy went back in time and raped Hitler.
Like,
teachers are like,
I would like deface the school and then I'd like somehow frame it so it's like Matt Elke did it.
Was that the dude's real name?
Yes.
Well, you really got that in the fucking on the tip of your tongue, ready to go at any
moment.
Oh,
it's right there.
Do you visualize that kid when you're like working, like when you're doing aggressive shit? Is it still the kid who bullied you when you were 11 years old?
Not anymore.
Right on. Well, you're growing up then.
I am.
Good for you, man.
Yeah.
Right on. Hey, I mean, we all grow up. But we actually don't all grow up, and I never fucking grow up, as we've proven on this show. And one of the major constants in my life has been a series of films from when I was a child. When I was a little kid, I only had cartoons on VHS. Yeah. My parents weren't into movies, so we didn't have, like, Terminator and shit. So it was all Disney cartoons and Gremlins 1 and 2,
mm-hmm.
Ghostbusters 1 and 2, all the Indiana Jones movie, and two films about two young men from San Dimas, California called Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. And ladies and gentlemen, we are thrilled and honored to have with us tonight Bill S. Preston Esquire himself. Please welcome to the stage Mr. Alex Winter. Right here, man. Sorry. D-Rock, Channel 1. Also, can we get a Diet Coke down here? When you get a chance.
Good evening.
How's it going, sir?
Good.
Thank you for joining us.
No sweat.
Do you think Hitler would have been upset if he went back in time and raped him?
I was thinking while I was listening to you guys talking that it occurred to me that Inglourious Basterds is basically like a podcast.
Yeah, he stole that from me.
I mean,
yeah.
You think, I was listening to you guys, I was like, that's better than Inglourious Basterds.
Thank
I was
you,
like,
sir.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about it, I was like, okay, all right, man, what if Hitler, like, lost the war because, like, some fucker owned a movie? That's pretty funny, man.
But ours.
All right, come back next week when we have another podcast.
Totally. No, ours involved, but instead of like getting blown up in a movie theater, ours involved that guy like holding him down.
That was good.
Forcefully. Yeah, yeah.
It was more imaginative.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, more visual.
Fuck Quentin.
I'm not sure I want to see that, but.
Yeah, no, we'll go to black. It'll be artsy. We'll like go to black for that scene. It'll be all implied. Like we'll shut the door and you'll just hear it.
Yeah.
No, but thank you for joining.
I put the bear Jew to shame, man.
Yeah. You are the new bear.
I'm just the bear.
I think everyone should be allowed to film on an epic scale their Hitler fucking fantasy.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, why should Tarantino be the only one who gets to do
that? That should be part of the Jewish reparations package from the German government.
Well,
like,
yeah, just anybody.
Enough money to yeah, absolutely, film a Hitler snuff film. But not... Speaking of time travel, dude, most of us here know you from a bunch of stuff, but first and foremost, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, which I think that owes a fucking round of applause because, I mean, two of my favorite films as a child, and they still hold up to this day. They've definitely, in every point of my life, I found a new reason to like those movies. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's definitely, cool. We're glad to have you here, sir. How did that first come about, man? How did you take the jump from an NYU film student to the dude who invented the word to the dude who invented the way I talk? Like I owe you money or something.
Totally. Yeah, you probably do.
We'll talk about that after.
Well, I'd done a lot of acting as a teenager, and then I went to film school. This is a short version, the very short version. And I got out to film school. Cool thing about you went to SVA, right?
Yeah, I went to School of Visual Arts for a while.
Yeah, NYU and SVA are really close to each other. And anyone who goes to film school knows that it's like sticking a vacuum cleaner in your pocket and just sucking all your money out of it, all the lint, and then basically all your clothes get sucked into it too. So by the time I was three quarters away through school, I was so frickin' broke that I went to my agent and I was like, I know I said I never wanted to act again, but I really want to act again.
Well, because I'm sorry, at this point you'd already done a few films, right?
What happened was I'd worked on off Broadway as a kid, so I had an agent and a manager from doing shows as a kid, and I went to film school. And then about halfway through my sophomore year, I ran out of money, and so I said I'll act again. So I went and I auditioned for this movie called Death Wish 3, and I'd never been in a movie before
with Charlie fucking Bronson. Yeah.
So this is much more interesting than any of the Bill and Ted stuff. So I'm going to skip the Bill and Ted.
We'll go back.
Please sort of circumvent over to a better story,
dude. Lead us, guide us, sir.
Yeah. So anyway, so I go and meet the director of Death Wish 3, and I have no idea what I'm going in for. And he's this famous British director named Michael Winner, who made all the Death Wish movies and The Mechanic and all this great stuff. He made a lot of great stuff up until Death Wish 3, but. Anyway, he decided to stop for some reason.
Third one wasn't the charm, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure how good two was either, but at least, you know, Jeff Goldblum was a rapist in that one. I was a rapist in three. It made a lot of sense.
In a strong tradition, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
He was the fly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he would grow up to be the fly. So I go and I meet this very distinguished British director with a massive cigar in his mouth, and he's looking at me, and I, you know, as hardcore and tough as I look now...
Which is fucking crazy.
I know you guys can't see me, but I'm very intimidating looking. Yeah. With all the, you know, I've got all the tats and stuff.
I'm sitting 30 feet away.
Yeah. So I'm looking at this guy and thinking, why does he want to meet me for a movie called Death Wish 3? I'm assuming maybe there's like some, I don't know, there's like some English exchange student that shows up in the Bronx and gets like sodomized. I'm going to play that guy. And I don't know what he wants me to do. So he's looking at me. He's like, your resume says you were born in London. And that's my Dick Van Dyke London accent. And I said, yes, that's right. He said, you're hired. I was like, what? To do what? Don't you want me to like read or? No, my boy. I want you to be in my picture. It's a damn good part. He kept saying that. It's a damn good part. It's great. Now whenever I cast anything, like commercial, I'm like, it's a damn good part.
Dude, I would have been telling people I'm British for years if that's all it takes to get into fucking movies.
Dude, it was fantastic. And so he basically, I was born in England. It's very hard to get dual citizenship because it's not really legal. So I got dual citizenship because Michael Winner is not only a big British director, but he's got some like royal connections and his family's like mega rich. And he basically got me a British passport and put me in this movie because we shot Death Wish 3 in an abandoned hospital in London, even though it takes place in the Bronx. So this guy bought this hospital, the hospital that Charlie Chaplin was born in, built a South Bronx set on the back of it, and blew the shit out of it.
That's fuck you, Chaplin. In Death Wish 3.
It was the weirdest. And he didn't really have the money to like, you know, the movie cost an insane amount of money considering how god awful it is. I mean, it looks like a homemade porno movie shot on VHS, and it was like $10 million, and like the DP had like shot Kubrick movies. I remember being on set one day and it was like, they were arguing. He was like, John, light up this shot. This isn't a B picture. We're like, no, this is like a fucking triple Z picture.
You're like, dude, there's a three in the title.
Yeah, he was so completely deranged. He thought he was making Barry Lyndon. And it was incredible.
He's like, you are Malcolm McDowell, right?
By the end of that shoot, I was Malcolm McDowell. Yeah, I was I was on a bender. But anyway, he hired like two or three New York theater actors to come over to London and play the Puerto Rican gang. And so my name is Hermosa, which makes sense. And then another guy who was this Greek Chekhovian actor played, I don't know, you know, whatever his name was, like the slicer.
So and he cast you because you were born in England, but then had you play a Mexican?
He cast me because I was born in England and then had me play a Puerto Rican.
A Puerto Rican,
Bronx,
excuse me.
Puerto Rican rapist shooting on a hospital in London. And anyway, so we just went completely bananas. So what happens, I got to London. We realized immediately this was going to be the wackest, lamest movie of all time. And so we just fucked with him the whole time. I mean, we didn't take anything seriously. And I said to him the first day, I was like, look, man, I'll do my own stunts. And he said, really? I said, yeah, I'll do my own stunts, which is really dumb of me because Winter is known for being a sadist. He does terrible things to people and people get very scared by him. So I had this one scene I had to do. Where I had to, it's a very simple scene. I have to jump on the hood of a woman's car. I have to bang on her windshield, and say things like, I'm going to eat you and, you know, let me lick your, you know, the back of your spine or whatever it was. And
normal
then,
things you would say to a woman when jumping on the back of her
and
car.
The car has to like drive around our little set and down into an underpass. And then she hits the brakes. I fly off the car, land on the concrete. I get up. He said, just make up a line. So I was like, God, what's the worst, dumbest line I can think of? Because we were just fucking with him. I was like, okay, I got this one, Michael. So I go down there. I say, you're mine now, bitch, and I'm going to fucking kill you. I think that's what my line was I made up. It's a classic. I open the door of the car. Bronson steps out of the shadows and hits me in the chest with a lead pipe cut, right? That's all it was supposed to be. I start shooting at 6 p.m. because I said I'd do my own stunts. Winter spends 9 fucking hours just on the part of me jumping on the car before it goes into the underpass, because there's like 5 different cars coming at me for no reason, just coming at me, you know, and almost kills me. But I'm like, I'm not going to let him like knuckle me under. So I keep doing it. I keep doing it over and over and over again. The stuntman's going, dude, you got to let this kid go. You're going to kill me. He's like, hey, you do some stunts. You know.
Then he was born in England.
He was born in England. I got him his passport. It's a damn good part. Then I go into the underpass, and I go off the car, and I've got some padding on, and I get up. I say, you're mine now, bitch, and I'm going to fucking eat you. I run over the car, open the door. No Bronson. Shit. Okay, it's now 5 in the morning. I've been doing this scene since 9 p.m. I'm exhausted. My body's hurt from like holding on this car. Do it again. Bronson does not step out. He's got this kind of rubber lead pipe thing he's supposed to hit me with. Doesn't show up. And again, no Bronson. And again, no. And every time I'm doing this take, she's hitting the brakes. I'm flying off the car. I'm landing on the concrete. I'm getting up. I'm saying, you're mine now, bitch. I'm going to fucking eat you. Just hard from a method standpoint after take 9 or 10. And no Bronson. So eventually Michael goes over to Charles Bronson, who he's made many, many movies with. And he takes him aside and he says, and I'm, of course, edging over to eavesdrop, like, what the hell's going on? And he says, Charlie, you have to hit this boy. It's quite late. To which Bronson replies, Michael, I can't hit this fucking kid. He looks like a choir boy. I'll lose my audience. Needless to say, when he finally hit me in the chest with a lead pipe, I think he broke like 4 of my ribs and we all went home.
God. He was like, I fucked the choir boy thing.
Exactly.
I'll hit him now again. Can we hit him again?
So
that's anyway. Awesome. So you got physically abused by Charles Bronson.
I did.
Not many people can say that, sir. That's a good one. So Death Wish happened. We're going chronologically, Lost Boys.
Death Wish happened and then Lost Boys. Yeah, I did Death Wish between my sophomore and junior year of NYU, and I did Lost Boys between my junior and senior year of NYU.
You had a productive couple
That's
years.
That's like
there.
What I did on my summer vacation.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
I like smoked pot and watched Tiny Toons and like
I was a vampire.
So, yeah.
So,
yeah, we went and did Lost Boys, and you know, that was a lot of fun just because I was so unbelievably broke at that point that I was eating regularly. And we were up in Santa Cruz, like, riding motorcycles, and, you know, I didn't have to do a whole lot of acting. I think I never really did a whole lot of acting in any of the movies I was in.
I love that the reason that you're in some of, like, the most iconic films of my life is because you're like, oh, I was broke. I decided to be, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but, you know, that's honestly probably most young actors' motivation. But the thing was is that I did, you know, I wanted to be in the movies. It was really great to be in the movies. I was working with, I loved watching the people that I was working with, like Mike Chapman, who shot Lost Boys, was like one of the main reasons I was psyched to be in it. He was one of my idols at NYU. He shot Raging Bull, and he worked on Jaws, and he was one of the great DPs. So I really was learning a lot, you know. So by the time I did Lost Boys, I was like, shit, I'm learning a lot more here than I am at film school. So after Lost Boys, I didn't go back to NYU. I just stayed out in LA, and that's when Bill and Ted happened.
And then from there, I mean, so you're in LA, you'd just done Lost Boys, you'd been in Death Wish 3, which obviously turned you into a star overnight.
Overnight, yeah. I mean, yeah. The choir boy.
I was almost named after you, actually, because of your role in Death Wish 3.
Really? Yeah, totally. You were almost to be Hermosa Cohen?
Absolutely. <Yeah. laughs> My parents were huge fans and kind of stoners, so they didn't really think about the outcome of that. But no, so you're living in L.A. now, and you've done a few films at this point, and Bill and Ted, sir, like, how did that wonderful
Well, I mean, just like, you just audition happen. For stuff. You get these calls, they say, come in. I was like, oh, this is like Back to the Future ripoff. I'll go do that.
Like, this movie sounds shitty. That's for me.
Whatever, you know. So we went in and auditioned, and, you know, it was a wacky audition because I was talking about this the other day, but they ran everyone through the ringer because it was me and Keanu. We hooked up fairly early on in the audition process, and then they just started throwing people at us, and it was like all these different actors every day. It was like me opposite another guy, and him opposite another guy, and eventually just came back around to us. So it was just auditioning, just like anything else.
Who are any of the other actors who they were throwing you guys with? Anyone that's become big?
Everybody. It was everybody in town. It was like they just like raided the garbage can. That's awesome. You know, it was like one day it was me and Kiefer, one day it's me and Pauly Shore, one day it's like,
oh my
god, I'm not joking. Like every day,
there's
it was
so
like
many alternate universes going ahead that are like, going through my head right now.
Yeah, it was like it became a joke in town that you were auditioning for Bill and Ted. You know, it was like that. You know, like that Looney Tunes cartoon with, you know, Sam the sheepdog. He's like, "Hey, Sam, you know, I'm Clock." Clock, another Bill and Ted audition.
I want to see a Bill and Ted with like Morgan Freeman and the lady from Laverne and Shirley. No, but then so you and Keanu hooked up early on, and then so Bill and Ted was originally, it was the writers of Bill and Ted had it as an improv. They were improv characters, right?
Yeah, Chris Matheson and Ed Solomon, who are two amazing writers and still write a lot of big stuff. They were doing it as like a stand-up routine. And they would do it like around, I don't know if they did it publicly that much. It was like a routine they do for friends, and they would go into some clubs and just sort of show up and improv as Bill and Ted. And then they sold it, and we all worked really closely together, me and Keanu and Chris and Ed in both movies. So it was kind of a four-headed Hydra. You know,
is that how many heads Hydra usually has?
That's a Hydra, I think, is five heads.
That's a standard. So it was one head removed from a
Hydra. Less than a Hydra.
That's not bad, man. That should be like a bumper sticker or something. Yeah. A t-shirt, at least. Everything's a t-shirt. Look at his fucking t-shirt. Pretty gay, right?
Love this shirt.
Yeah, you do. No, so the thing with Bill and Ted, too, is when I first saw it as a kid, it's kids that you said your kids dig it, right?
Or
your fans.
Yeah.
It's because there's, I mean, especially the sequel more so than the first one, I think, at least in my personal opinion, when I was a kid, at least. Because there was heaven and hell, and there were fucking aliens, and like, you know what I mean?
The clowns, man, it traumatized me.
Did they? And the Easter Bunny?
That would have been my hell, like the Easter Bunny and all that shit. That would have been me, like, oh god, I only could watch that scene once.
My hell would be watching you fill up jugs of piss when you were a little kid with your brother.
But not the clown.
Yeah, but not the clown. No, but see, as a little kid, the thing that's so weird with it is, as a little kid, when I first saw it, I mean, as most little kids do, it's an action fantasy kind of adventure kind of flick, so that immediately draws you to it. And then when I got into pot, I was like, oh, this is a stoner movie. They're two potheads. And I had this whole theory that, and I think I'm wrong, right? I mean,
Well, it's a stoner theory, so of course you're wrong.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I had this whole theory that in the late 80s, early 90s, that the studios weren't showing a lot of pot use. So like Bill and Ted, Wayne's World, it was all these stoner characters that never smoked pot on screen. But I was like, it's implied. Like every time they're not on screen, they're getting high.
Right.
They're not stoner. Bill and Ted, I mean, from the man who was Bill, they weren't stoners, right?
It was a conspiracy. You were right. Yeah. There was a web of intrigue.
They were stoners. Yeah.
Extremely
awesome.
Complex labyrinth of intrigue behind.
Yeah. Every time they cut away, that phone booth would just be fucking filled with smoke.
Yeah. Yeah. Bill and Ted is an anagram for cannabis, just without the without the S's or the C, and then you add a T and an ampersand.
But you add those are silent.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But the characters themselves were not stoners, right? I think Mm-mm. they get lumped in a lot with.
No, I mean, it doesn't really. I mean, none of that, you know, that kind of comic character goes back a long way. What was the guy that played Gilligan was like the original.
Bob
whatever.
Denver?
John Denver.
Yeah,
Bob
John
Denver.
Bob Denver.
One of the
in,
Denvers.
What was the name of the character he played? Anyway, there were
Maynard G. Hebcast.
They came out of
and
the Dobie beats.
Gillis.
There was all these kind of beat characters that started in the '50s. Yeah, and there was like a whole T-head kind of vibe attached to them. But with Bill and Ted, the whole joke was that, I mean, and this was something that we did think about, was that these guys weren't cool enough to be stoners.
Yeah.
That's part of the humor. I mean, it wasn't like implied that, oh, we would go behind the garage and then smoke a bowl and then come back out and be all innocent. It was like, I mean, I think with Wayne's World maybe, but Wayne's World is so arch. It's not like, I don't think you're supposed to believe for a second, you know, they have these ridiculous wigs on and stuff. But with Bill and Ted, I mean, the whole joke was that these guys were about the two most uncool kids in the entire school.
But I
the stoners would have kicked Bill and Ted's ass. That was that's the kind of thing we always thought about. It was like if we'd have hooked up with like a Spicoli, he just would have kicked our ass.
And then he would have went back in time and tried to put
and
piss
then
you
would have poured urine on his head. That would have been very grateful.
But I think
and then we would have gang raped Hitler and the whole thing.
I think that's one of the things that makes the films hold up though, because they're not stoners, there's nothing devious about those characters whatsoever. They're they're innocent. You were an innocent. Sincere, but am I right on that?
Yeah, that was the joke. I mean, the joke was that they're two completely wide-eyed, naive kids. All right,
someone just fucking peeled out. They're like, I don't like all this rape talk.
So that was the gag. That was the gag.
And I think I don't even know if you could call them stupid because the words they used,
this is by far the deepest analysis of these movies I've ever heard.
I could write it.
I want to interject that.
I could write a fucking
as you
thesis,
sort of progress into wherever you're going.
Your vocabulary.
The two movies I hadn't seen in 20 years until about 2 weeks ago when we screened them.
I've seen your movie 80 more times than you have. Like, do you want to know about Bill and Ted? Just ask me questions. Actually, no.
The vocabulary was nuts.
The language, like
there were whole. I think there were whole chunks of the last 20 years of my life when I forgot I was actually. In them, so
do you get recognized a lot? Like
every day,
as Bill, right? So you mean you?
No, just for other stuff. Yeah,
but like, you're hey, asking. Aren't you the guy who drove by me the other day?
Exactly. Yeah. Hey man,
they're like choir boy.
I got that once too.
Really?
Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah. No, but
what was your vampire name? Like Marco?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I couldn't have told you that. I don't know.
Really, dude?
At least it wasn't Hermosa. Wait, what the fuck is it with me and the names? Marco, Hermosa. Like, when people look at me and go, there's this like kind of white Jewish kid from New York.
Yeah.
Marco.
And that's the other thing. White Jewish kid from New York, right? Playing California surfer dude.
Yeah, but Keanu's
like
this Toronto. I mean, neither of us were California kids,
And it totally worked. I mean, I never for a second didn't think you guys were like straight.
It's not the hardest accent to master.
Yeah. I mean, I've kind of tried to cultivate it over the years.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the methodology of it, you go to like a mall in the valley for about 45 seconds.
Yeah. Especially in that time period.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, in order to get my costume for the second one, I literally was like, I'm going to go method on the second one, I'm a fucking movie star now. I'm going to go method on this. Man, I'm actually going to play a character. I like looked outside my window, lived in Venice. I was like, saw some dude with his hat on back. I was like, I'm done. Where was I?
You're like, and Bill
doing
is
something.
Born.
Right. Yeah.
No, but like the language in those films, like, so, like you guys hardly use contractions. Instead of saying can't, it'll be cannot, or like, I mean, most egregious. So, with the like kind of surfer patois thrown in, if you will, they're not dumb characters because it's like, where the fuck did they get these words from? And they're using them right sometimes.
Yeah.
they're just naive. I mean, that's more like they're just really, really immature. But the joke, I mean, the thing is it, you know, the guys who wrote it, Chris and Ed, are really, really good with language. And I think that's, you know, the parts were really fun to play just from a language standpoint. Those words are fun to say. The actual, you know, the weird sort of games we would play with the rhythms of negatives and double negatives and triple negatives are just fun.
And it kind of instantly pervaded the culture, right? Was that weird for you to see? Like,
it was really weird, especially, you know, when the first one came out, you know, both movies sort of had what we called the Bill and Ted curse. Both studios that made them went under. So the first one
was De Laurentiis, right?
First one was DEG. And, well, De Laurentiis, like, yeah, he's
still producing today, but his company went under,
yeah,
right?
But, yeah, you never know with him, like, why. You know, he was probably just laundering money or something that week. We must fold DG this week.
He's like, no more movies
no
for
more
a
DG
while.
Today.
He's like, someone called Dario. Tell him I need a place to stay.
I'm now starting new company today. So anyway, so he made the movie for Dino, who I don't think had any idea what he was doing with this movie. He doesn't even speak English.
He's like, yes, he's a phone booth.
Yeah. Two funny guys that are kind of, I think they smoke pot, if you ask me.
I think there's a conspiracy.
This is an implicitly implied pot controversy.
He was all over the map. I think right before that, they did Evil Dead 2. Like,
yeah, Dealer ended
all over the place.
Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he was on someone had gotten him to sign a bunch of shit while he wasn't paying attention. Yeah. But anyway, so we did that for them, and they went under. And so the movie sat on a shelf. We shot it, I think, in 87 or 88, and it was sat on a shelf until 89.
Yeah, because I noticed just the other day that it was San Dimas 1988, and I was like, wait, this movie came out in 89.
That's and we shot in 87, I'm pretty sure. So anyway.
That rock your world, Brenda.
There you go, man.
That's
because we had a time machine.
Yeah.
So it sits on a shelf. We forget about it. And we kind of did forget about it. And we didn't think it was going to get released. And then it got bought for like no money by this really small company that made a fortune.
Orion, right?
Nelson Entertainment. This is the first one still.
Oh, okay. So only the second one was it? Or?
I think so. I can't remember. No, Orion ended up distributing it.
Right.
Nelson
on. Yeah, yeah.
Now you just lost everyone. Distribution talk. Click. Yeah.
Let's bring it back. Blowjobs. Yay. Party time.
Hitler sodomy. Okay, they're back. Anyway,
oh,
so
my God, see, we got him.
So literally what happened was is I was you know, shooting most of the time in those days, and I was shooting a Butthole Surfers video in Austin. And when the day the movie opened, and I was down in we were like in El Paso, or we were somewhere outside in the middle of nowhere in Texas. And it was the weirdest thing, because I went into a diner to get something while we were shooting, and the whole diner went crazy. And I realized the movie had come out and had become a hit, and that's how we found out. And my agent called me and was like, the movie did really well. I was like, it did? You know, me and Keanu would laugh about it, you know, that it was like no one was ever going to see this thing. It was going to be like one of those 4 o'clock in the morning HBO movies, and which it became eventually. But
as do
all movies, they all go there to die. But it was it was really strange, because it sort of immediately following that, suddenly it was like, cereal boxes and like Saturday morning cartoons,
Game Boy game, like I yeah.
Exactly. It was like the tsunami of pop culture.
Bill and Ted still host a show at Universal Studios.
They do the Halloween show.
I know.
You ever sneak in? Do you ever?
Oh, did I?
I think no offense, but yeah, I think several members of that enterprise have camped outside my door.
Have you ever sneaked in to fuck with people?
No. To their
like, here's
no.
the show right here. Yeah. What? Later, yeah. Peace.
I don't even sneak into Florida. Period to fuck with people.
I don't blame you, man. That's awesome. So Excellent Adventure came out and it was huge. Bonus Journey was how many years after that?
That was a few years later. We both went off and did a bunch of other stuff. I was mostly shooting. I went and did the Idiot Box after
MTV,
that.
The MTV show. Right?
Yeah,
totally.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And that's a great story. What happened was
those.
We had me and my buddy Tom Sturman went to NYU Film School together, and we made this movie called Squeal of Death. And we were big fans of Sam Raimi, so we sent the movie to Sam Raimi, and he loved it. And he tried to produce a bunch of movies with us. So we wrote like three movies in a row for Sam and his producer that we tried to sell. One of them was this really fucked up Butthole Surfers movie that became Freaked. Was originally written as a 200.
Which we'll talk about in a few, yeah.
But Freaked started, we wrote it with Gibby Haynes from the Buttholes. It started as an extremely intense, like $100,000 gonzo, you know, cult movie, where basically the family goes down to Texas, the Buttholes rape them, put them in a cage, and use them as bongs for I mean,
why doesn't that movie exist also in addition to Freak?
Yeah, that's what we had. That was called Freaks. And we tried to sell that. We couldn't get anyone to buy it. Then we wrote this anthology comedy that we worked on with Raimi, and we tried to get people to buy that. And Amazon Women on the Moon had just come out and flopped, so no one would buy that. So one day, Bill and Ted comes out. It's this big hit. MTV calls me into their offices, and they're like, we want you to guest VJ as Bill. And like, that's when you know your life is really... And I was like a film student.
Yeah,
you know?
You're like, I went to the best film school in the country.
I was like, are you... I mean, my thought bubble. Are you out of your fucking mind? That's like, you might as well, like, literally, you know, cut me off at the knees and, like, pour acid on my head. That's like... And I think what I said was, that is so nice of you to offer me that. I'm really flattered. But how about we have a TV show instead? So we got...
That was a good idea.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. I was inspired, actually. So
dude, the London thing, that, you're awesome with, like, getting those fucking things going.
It was a damn good pot. So I took we took the Laugh Out script, which we couldn't get made, the anthology comedy, and we chopped it up, and we made it into the Idiot Box. And they gave us... It was the first live-action... fictional content they ever had on MTV.
Yeah. Non-musical content, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And, we got to do basically whatever we wanted because, you know, the upside for them was they didn't have to pay us anything. MTV doesn't pay anyone, I think, to this day. So I think it's their corporate mandate.
Notoriously,
right?
Yeah.
We will not pay anyone anything.
They get Kim people get paid in like Kim Kardashian posters.
Exactly.
Or something.
So they didn't pay us shit. So we went and just shot that.
Lots
had a great
of Carson
time.
Carson Daly's hair.
Yeah. And then, literally, I was like, wow, I wonder what happened to that guest VJ Bill thing. And I turned on TV one day, and there's Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
And
here's the thing. And if Pauly was Bill, he would have done it.
And I guess they just asked everyone who walked into their office, you know, do you want a guest VJ talking like a dude? And they would either say yes or no. And eventually, they found someone who said yes. But so anyway.
That's how Pauly Shore found a career, because you turned down the role of guest VJ.
God bless him. But...
I mean, come on, in the army now?
So
Allen Green, Dag is in it, folks.
Hell yeah. So anyway, so we did the Idiot Box, and then we went and did Bill and Ted 2 after that.
And Bogus Journey is probably, if not my favorite movie from my childhood, I mean, that yeah. Like the first one holds up, and as a kid, like, I didn't love the first one. But as an adult now, I appreciate Excellent Adventure much more than I did as a child. Bogus Journey was, from the get-go, like, the most epic. I think I was, like, 9 or 10 when it came out. I think it was the first visualization I ever had for heaven and hell. Mm-hmm. So for many years, like, that was... When I thought of heaven and hell, I thought of, like, fucking Bogus Journey shit. And, like, William Sadler, like, dressed up as, like, a fucking...
Yeah.
With the Poison lyrics and stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's good. Those are good images to have.
Yeah, right? Always. I like to think of William Sadler every day. At least a few times every day.
Why not?
I mean, it's good. That and Brendo with Hitler. That's the new thing I'm going to get into the mix. No, but... So how did Bogus Journey came about? Studio... I mean, it was... First one only cost, like...
First one was like $7 or $8 million bucks.
It grossed,
I think,
like, over 40 or
it
something.
It made a
right?
lot of money, yeah, and it made a lot of money on DVD or video, whatever the hell it was in those days.
So it was a no-brainer for a sequel from the studio standpoint, right? Or,
yeah, there was a lot of talk about making another one, and then we had, you know, everyone had a lot more input. So, you know, I got to sort of imprint more of my sense of humor on it, which is definitely darker and weirder. And, you know, we just got to push everything farther, and Chris and Ed got to push everything farther, and, you know, it's a movie that it's unrealized, unfortunately, because our eyes were so much bigger than our stomachs that we wrote a movie and we shot a lot of a movie that never really made it all the way to the screen. The whole third act of that movie is me and Keanu used to call it Bill and Ted's omitted adventure. Because on a script, while you're shooting, when they cut scenes, you get your pages and they say omit on them. And by the end of that movie, it was like all the cool shit at the end we want to do, we couldn't afford it. It just said omit, omit, omit. It was like, what are we going to do? It's like, we'll have them play this Battle of the Band. It was like, you know, it basically just tagged the same ending from the first one on the second one.
What was the original ending?
The original ending was that the evil us's, in order to fight us, they realized they couldn't do it alone. So they get all of our fears from hell. And there was this badass car chase all over LA at the end. With us against all of our fears. So it was like me and my granny wheelchair, which had like fucking rockets on it.
Which
I mean, it really was like this awesome,
kid,
it was like, like, and we shot a lot of it, so it was a lot of fun. So it was like, we shot it in Santa Monica.
So the granny, the bunny, the
granny,
military
the bunny,
school.
And Colonel Oates. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, I've got like a rocket fueled wheelchair, and I'm like hurling fucking, like, you know, clawing my way onto the van with the guys in it ripping the roof off. And it was really, really over the top. I'm like, I'm not sure it wouldn't have just scared the shit out of kids if we'd have actually.
Well, that's the thing. And that's why I think I love that movie so much. There were a lot of parts about it that scared the shit out of me.
Scared the shit out of me.
I think little kids like that. So instead of like badass chase through LA, they were like, kiss, I guess works.
Well, what it was like, I watched it the other night when we screened it here in LA, and I hadn't watched it in years. And I was like, I wonder how it ends. And it's just like, you think about the movie, we go to like the whole third act, the whole climax is we go to like a fucking Home Depot, get some shit, build these like lame ass robots, and then it's over.
And then there's
the movie's
like,
over
sing,
in like 5 minutes.
Station.
You're just like,
and
what
station
the
there,
hell?
Though.
Yeah, so it's a fairly truncated movie, but the first three quarters I think are pretty cool.
I think the take on the Seven Seal and stuff like that. Like,
yeah, that scene is great. I mean, that, Hewitt did such a good job directing that scene. So cool.
Things that I loved initially, but later in life, it's like I used to read Calvin and Hobbes and The Far Side as a kid, and we're huge. And this was a lot of the stuff I liked as a kid. But was a massive fan, but didn't really even get why I should be a fan yet.
Yeah, right.
And it was almost later I found out. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, I mean, what's the deal with Station? Now that he brought it up.
Oh man. Well, this was a bone of contention with me and the writers, because like I got, we started working on the script, and then I got the script to read, and I was like, oh, this is really good. And then it got to the Station thing. And I was like, I read it. I was like, yeah. I went back and read the script again. I was like, I remember calling them Ed and like, Station, that's not funny. And he's like, no, it is funny. You just got to roll with me on this. We were writing, and like every time we said the word Station, we just laughed our asses off. I was like, but it's not funny. The word Station isn't, it's not, there are certain words that if you say them over and over again, they are funny. This is not one of those words.
Did they really think like kids were going to be out on the street afterwards, like going Station?
But they were. The thing about it that's so fucked up is that is what happened.
Yes. I guess if you say Station to someone in the right fucking crowd, there's an instant bond, dude.
It's just, it shows you the evil, hideous power of the media.
Absolutely.
You can just hurl fecal matter at the public and they will go crazy over it.
I was going to say, like, I grew up.
You're basically like, my childhood was mooted now.
Like, I grew up in Southern California, and somehow Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure managed to make us talk even more like surfer dudes.
Right.
Like, I didn't even think that was possible, but yeah. Like, when Bogus and Bodacious and that's when it really got crazy, where nobody could understand what the fuck anybody was saying down here.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah. Last summer I went to go work on Cop Out with Kevin in New York, and on the first day I was meeting my key PA, I PA'd on it, and he was like, hey, good to meet you, Matt. And I was like, hey, what's going on, Duder? And he goes, Duder? He was like, hey, everyone, this kid just called me Duder. Everyone was like, Duder! So my nickname became Duder, and throughout the entire summer, I'm like, what the fuck? Did people not say Duder? And then I realized you made up that word in that movie. Because then I watched Bill and Ted later, and I was like, holy shit, that's where Duder is from. Yeah.
And then when I moved out to Wisconsin when I was like 20, and I didn't realize that I sounded different than other people in other parts of the country. And I said rad and radical all the time, especially after Bill and Ted. And my friends, they make fun of me, like, oh, radical, eh? Because
they were Canadian in Wisconsin?
Norwegian. They're Norwegians, and they say A, too, a lot. Like, oh, don't you know, eh? Like,
they're like,
it's Bobby's
it was
mom
Canada.
In Bobby's
right.
world, am I right?
Like, and they're making fun of you because you say rad.
So they'd be like, oh, rad. Yeah. And I literally erased rad from my vocabulary over the course of, like, 3 months.
Right.
Because they made fun of me so much.
Now, man, I on the other hand, choose to still only say dude, bro, man, and you know what I mean, which doesn't really help me being taken seriously.
I've kind of taken it from you, too. Like, now that when I talk to you, I'm always like, yeah, man. And I'm like, that's
you're totally vibing off of me, Brenda.
I'm a yeah, man guy now.
You're like the tie to my Cher Horowitz.
Yeah, man.
We're going with Clueless analogies.
Totally.
But we're not.
We used that last week.
So after Bogus Journey, sir, you finally kind of did what you went to school for almost, right?
Yeah. At that point, I was like, you know what?
You're like, I got money. I don't need to be in famous films anymore,
yeah,
I guess.
I was done with the day job. And we got a chance to make Freaked at 20th Century Fox.
Yeah.
And that was crazy. We got a lot of money to make exactly what we wanted to make, and it was an insane experience, because it was, you know, it started as a Buttholes movie, and And it was just a very Hollywood story that we couldn't get a $200,000 Butthole Surfers movie made. When we modified it slightly and repitched it as a $12 million movie, we had it sold within like 2 weeks.
He's like, don't worry, there won't be any Butthole Surfers in it. Just give us that money.
Exactly. Forget the buttholes thing we were talking about. Oh, sure, we'll give it to you or whatever
and
you want.
And you got Anthony from Blossom.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we did.
You're going to... Last week, we had a guy here who was on a show with Jenny Garth. And afterwards, we were all like, we were chatting. And Brenda was like, okay, two questions. One... Was Jenny Garth nice? Two, did you ever meet her husband? And I was like, what?
That would be the obvious second question.
Brendo likes TV shows.
Yeah.
No, but you got a bunch of people in that flick.
We did.
You got Randy Quaid.
Randy Quaid, Mr. T, Burke Shields, Bobcat Goldthwait.
John Hawks. Who's credited, but only has the one line, right?
No. He's the cowboy. He's in the whole movie.
Oh, is John Hawks the cowboy?
Yeah.
Holy shit!
He's just under a ton of makeup.
Yeah, I couldn't tell. Like, that's
John Hawks and I, we met on a Percy Adlon movie called Rosalie Goes Shopping that we did in Arkansas together. And then I loved him so much that we started working together all the time. So he was in. John was actually in Entering Texas, the Butthole Surfers short we made, which is the closest we ever got to Freaked. And then he was in The Idiot Box. He's in a bunch of episodes of The Idiot Box. He's in all the stuff that I was doing at that time.
I'm a huge fan of that.
He's awesome.
Work. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, so Freaked, if you folks haven't, I mean, if anyone listening hasn't seen Freaked, it's available on Netflix now, right?
Instant watch.
If you want to go out and watch it, like, stop the podcast, watch it, then come back and like, be like, oh, now I get it. You know? But, you play a character named Ricky Coogan who is, and if you haven't seen the film, so fucking polar opposite from Bill that it you know what I mean?
Yeah. He's the anti-Bill.
And from someone who only knew you as Bill, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
He's not really Bill. He's an actor.
And you know what's even more postmodern than that is I wasn't even really an actor.
My head just fucking blew up, man. Or it will, like, 2 hours later, I'll be walking home and it'll
suck on that one.
Yeah. No, so Freaked is, you play Ricky Coogan, who's like, maybe you should take it away because
Ricky Coogan is just a scumbag grown-up child actor. It was an opportunity to lampoon what I just spent the last 4 years of my life doing. And he was kind of based on an amalgam of Bill and Jason Priestley from 90210. Or Luke Perry. Whatever it was, I went down to the newsstand and grabbed like a Teen Beat and just was like, went to my makeup artist and said, I want to look like these guys.
You're like, who's the top douchebag?
So I dyed my hair brown and, you know, I cut it short and, so it's about this scumbag young Hollywood actor who goes to South America to peddle a toxic chemical and gets turned into a freak. And Randy Quaid plays the carnival barker who runs the place.
And you have kids, so you might be aware of this, but I think you can sue Disney because that Stitch from Lilo and Stitch.
Oh, right.
when Ricky's got the ear on and shit, like, it's almost exact. Dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you want to get some lawyer, we should class action that shit because I'm sure I could think of something they stole from me.
Sure.
Wrote and directed and starred in the film, right?
Yeah, with my partner Tom Stern, and we did The Idiot Box. It was like The Idiot Box movie. It was the same gang of writers from The Idiot Box, and most of the actors from The Idiot Box were in it.
Right on. And how was it received when it first...
Well, it was received great. It wasn't distributed.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I meant. That's what I meant to kind of broach. It got amazing reviews,
You skipped a part. Yeah, you got to distribute a movie before it's received.
So it never came out theatrically.
Well, what happened was we made it for one chairman of the studio who had a lot of balls, and he had made like Naked Lunch there and a bunch of pretty irreverent movies for a major studio.
Which is an insane movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Totally nuts.
Yeah.
I mentioned Naked Lunch, my friends Jeremy and Melissa right here, we'd just seen a Peter Weller thing at the New Bev where he did RoboCop, and they'd mentioned Naked Lunch coming up, and I was like, you guys want to go? And Jeremy had said, yeah, but it's hard to masturbate in public.
Yeah.
That was possibly my favorite thing of all time. But yeah, so that producer was onto some trippy shit, obviously.
Yeah,
the guy
who
gave Freak to go. Yeah.
And you have to remember that Fox is owned by Rupert Murdoch, who's not the trippy shit guy. Eventually that guy moved on elsewhere, and the people that took over the place, it was sort of during Dan Quayle's Family Values campaign.
Yeah.
There was like this whole edict to like make much, you know. And we made Freak, it was at a time where, you know, we'd done The Idiot Box. There wasn't South Park yet. There wasn't a lot of this stuff hadn't happened yet. So there wasn't really a mainstream acceptance of really fucked up humor for that demographic. The studio just did, these new guys did not know what to do with it, to be fair to them. They just looked at it and just scared the shit out of them. It was like, I felt like one of those guys from like some, like Reefer Madness or something, where you've like fucked with the older generation. They're like, oh my God, what have you done? What is this? These crazy kids. So they tried to market like, well, Bill and Ted are both in it.
That's
so,
what I'm saying. They couldn't even find a marketing angle with that.
Well, no, because they just didn't know what they had. I mean, we went to these test screenings where they were like bringing in like 16-year-old kids who were literally like screaming curse words at the screen. They hated it so much. It's like they were expecting Bill and Ted. There was one kid in the middle of a screening. Brooke Shields opened her mouth at the beginning, and he just got up and screamed, "Fuck you, bitch!" at the top of his lung. And I was just like, that's not going to get us that rating number that we need.
The best part is that it's dude like, probably does that at every movie he goes to.
Exactly.
He just like bides his time and waits for the moment. He's like, exactly. I'm going to do it. Fuck you, bitch! Yeah. I'm out!
So they just didn't know what to do with it. And so eventually they didn't do anything with it. The thing was that we had an enormous amount of notoriety because a lot of people knew about the movie. A lot of people were watching The Idiot Box. We had, you know, the crew on the movie itself was insane. We had the best makeup artist, the best effects department.
Yeah,
it was
the makeup on that movie was incredible.
I mean, yeah.
So we had a groundswell of support, and then we started to hit the Toronto Film Festival. All these places took the movie. Our reviews were great. So we just self-distributed. So basically we just called Fox and said, can we have a poster? And it's what's funny about the studios. It's like, they will shit out 80,000 posters for DVD or whatever. It's like, but when you need one, right, for a movie that they're not really doing anything with, it's like pulling
teeth.
They've
made and paid for.
Exactly. So it's like, can we have a print and a poster? It's all we need. And we literally took that print and that poster and went town to town, theater to theater. And so we had basically an art house release for the movie, but it played, and then eventually it hit on video, and then it took off, and then it's been, you know, I got it released in the UK, and then they re-released it theatrically and stuff. So
but you guys were doing the art house city-to-city thing, which now is kind of in vogue with a lot of smaller films, before anyone was really doing that.
No,
right?
It wasn't before anyone was doing it. It's just you didn't do that with a studio movie. That you didn't do that with a $12 million movie. It was absurd.
That
but
had stars in it. That exactly. Had, like, Bill and Ted in it. Yeah,
exactly. So it was, you know, the funny thing about the movie is that, you know, from my perspective, it was a cult movie at heart. It was made from a cult perspective. It has a cult audience. It's totally successful as far as I'm concerned, because really at the end of the day, that's really the movie that we wanted to make. Had that transition with that regime happened 2 months earlier, we wouldn't have finished the movie. They would have just been like, what do we got in the hopper? Holy shit, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
Pull. Yeah. You know? And as a result, you know, thankfully, by the time, you know, that happened, we'd gotten the movie made. We were done. The thing that sucked is that we had the most insane soundtrack lined up. Iggy Pop had called us and said he wanted to write the theme song and sang it to me over the phone. He'd written a song for our movie and he sang it to me over the phone like, I needed to audition. Iggy was like, sorry, Iggy, I'm not interested.
So we had Iggy Pop, and then they were like, get that guy out of here.
We had all these amazing bands that were going to be on the soundtrack. And of course, we didn't have any money by the time we got to that end to do that. So we got the Buttholes in, and they did a bunch of music, and a bunch of Henry Rollins came in and did music, and P-Funk came in and did music. We got everyone we knew to come in and do music, but anyone we would have to pay gobs of money to, we couldn't get.
So, but that's definitely found its audience over the years.
Hell yeah. I mean, yeah. It's at this point, I think it's got the audience it would have gotten either way.
So, I mean, everything worked out in the end, right? And Hitler didn't even have to get raped.
Like, well, we did that, but that was off screen. Yeah.
That was implied. It was part of the
conspiracy. Exactly. It was part of the pot conspiracy.
But other than Freak, you've directed some other films, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I did after that is I moved back over to England, and I started a commercial production company. I've been shooting commercials for 20 years. And music videos and commercials and shit like that. And I made another independent movie called Fever, which was in Cannes, and all that jazz. And now I'm doing The Gate.
You're doing a remake of The Gate, but before that, you've done the last three like live action Ben 10s.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm, yeah, I did those for Cartoon Network. Those were for TV, and
which were like the highest rated things in Cartoon Network history.
They
right?
were, yeah.
Like,
and one of them got nominated for an Emmy for Best Special Effect.
Yeah,
it was like 16 million viewers or something. Or
yeah. Yeah.
If you translate that, that's like a $250 million movie.
I know.
Comes out in theaters,
I know.
Dude.
When we got those ratings,
you're
we're like
James
great.
Cameron now.
That's right. Yeah. Without the money. Yeah.
Those kids love Ben 10, man. For some reason, I don't know what we wrote on our website, but we get like 50 hits a day on Brax Comics for Ben 10 something.
Really?
I don't know what we wrote.
Yeah, yeah.
There's some keyword in there somewhere where literally half our traffic is from
little number
kids
10.
Searching for Ben 10.
He wrote the number 10 one. But so that's been massively successful. And speaking of other kids stuff, though, your new project, and know that not that the original was really a kids movie, but it a lot of kids, I mean, it was there, you know.
I watched it.
As a kid, right? Yeah. And Jesse was telling me about it.
Scared the shit out of me.
See, I haven't, I'm the perspective, I've never seen the original film. You're remaking, The Gate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which starred Stephen Dorff.
Yep. That was his first movie. Yeah.
And I've never seen it. Do you want to?
He was 11 years old, I think.
He was super young.
What's a quick sum up for someone like me who's never, I've heard
The Gate
it.
was like a mid 80s Amblin style horror film for kids. It was PG-13. PG-13. It was in the era of Poltergeist. It was a Canadian movie, so it has this weird kind of Canadian quality to it. It's kind
like
of
the peanut butter solution.
It's off.
That was
everyone just
kind of
polite
Canadian
and stuff.
Movie.
And,
it's off kilter. It's like, it has an almost Cronenberg-esque quality to it. It's very surreal. And very seat of your pants.
Tentacles grow out of kids' heads and start fucking?
Shit does get weird. Yeah, it does. He's like, this kid has an eyeball in his hand at one point and she's stabbing with like a Barbie doll. It's like, it gets really weird. But the point is that it's a really good movie for a remake, and I'm doing it 3D. It's a really good movie for 3D in an age where a lot of movies aren't good for 3D. Because it has a drive-in quality to it. It has a very surreal quality.
And that's the thing. You're in pre-production right now, said, right? But from the start of the process, this has been intended to be a 3D film.
Yeah, this has been, we've been designing 3D on this for 2 years. So
it's not gonna be one of those times where they put it through that post-conversion bullshit.
It's not what we call a retrofit movie where, you know, which is frankly gonna happen less and less, cause to be fair to the studios, they just are playing catch up. It's like, so they saw the words 3D was selling, they were like, holy shit. What do we got on our roster? Okay, we'll make that 3D. We'll make that 3D.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what audiences are smart to that now. They're like, oh, that's that bullshit 3D. Like,
yeah. So it's just the studios playing catch up.
Well, you hear stories. You hear stories all the time of parents taking kids to theaters and the kids saying, "Do we have to see it in 3D?"
Right.
Because I mean, the kids aren't even digging the 3D on. I mean, I've seen a few. How to Train Your Dragon. I don't know if you saw.
Except for
Avatar, which is the obvious. But
yeah.
There's been a few cases.
But
so
How to Train Your Dragon was fantastic in 3D.
That's what I mean. That was incredible. And because
Coraline.
The thing is, I don't really want the gimmicky kind of and
ping pong ball in your face.
Yeah.
What I think 3D can really do is it adds kind of depth and dimension. It makes it look like a diorama almost.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really atmospheric.
And that must work amazing for a horror film like The Gate.
Well,
right?
It does. Everything's in a house. I mean, the film I'm making is more like Robert Wise's The Haunting, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
And this is kind of like The Haunting. You know, it's three kids in a house. The house has a lot of, it's a very weird thing that starts to happen to the house. We're building the whole house as a set so we can really do crazy shit with it. So it's really ripe for 3D.
That's awesome. And have you been going out and like comparative shopping, as it were, like seeing a lot of 3D films?
Yeah,
and stuff
we've been
like
in
that.
3D school for a while, and you know when it doesn't work, it hurts. I mean, it physically hurts when you see these movies that are retrofitted. It hurts. I feel really bad for the directors when it happens to them because they didn't make the movie that way. Yeah. The effects guys didn't do the effects that way. Nothing was shot that way. So there's a lot. I mean, 3D is really tricky.
For 3D to work, it has to be. It has to be designed. It has to be designed. It has to be shot a certain way. It's got to be lit a certain way.
Totally.
Right?
You lose a lot of light level, so you have to shoot it and light it a certain way.
Totally. That's awesome, man. And you guys, you said you're shooting in Germany, right?
We're shooting in Germany. Yeah.
Speaking of our
that's just so we can fuck with Hitler.
Totally.
Because he's still alive and
he's
smoking a lot of weed.
Exactly. You're going to cast him in the film and be like, it's a great part or whatever, you know?
That's right.
It's a damn fine part.
That's right. We're going to give him a bong, get him high, and then sodomize him.
Yeah. You're like, your part is we lock you in the basement with that big ginger guy. He's like, not again. Oh, is it humanity?
So then, sorry, if we're done with The Gate for now, the other thing on everybody's mind is, and I know it's been all over the news lately.
This guy over
just stopped me. So keep talking.
Well, we were talking about The Gate for a second.
I'm sorry. I thought we'd.
That was some interpolitics. Brendo, I will smack you and kiss you with after this at the same time. So stop it. You're pre on The Gate right now. That's shooting soon. When can we expect that out? Do you think?
In about a year.
Awesome. In theaters and stuff. I mean, big 3D. The whole shebang bang. Now, I mean, I would definitely get slaughtered on the internet if I didn't bring it up, sir.
I got 10 tweets from people.
Lost Boys 6, is it really happening?
Yeah. Yep, me and Corey have we've been plotting this for a long time.
Yeah,
we
feel like Marco's return.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
you're the star.
Yeah, I'm actually going to call myself Hermosa in this one just to fuck with people. But
because
I got killed in the first one, so I'm going to come back as a Puerto Rican gangster.
Yes. You're like, this is how I got reincarnated.
That's right.
Yeah. Hello. no, but Bill and Ted 3, sir. I mean, it's been about a month now of every day I see.
Well, what happened was the guys at the New Beverly Theater, which is a theater in L.A., great
movie
theater.
Absolutely. Quentin Tarantino bought it recently.
Yep.
It's an awesome theater.
Saved one of the best theaters in L.A. for sure.
Yeah.
They showed both movies and we went and talked and some little kid came up and asked me if there was going to be a third one. And I basically said no, but, I'll sign your Bill and Ted balloon. And,
make Bill and Ted balloons.
Yeah, they did. And so then that got translated into, oh yes, absolutely. We're making a third one and we start shooting next Thursday. And then that just like hit the net like wildfire.
It was nuts. For
I mean,
it's
I know.
Still kind
but
of
the thing
is
was,
you realize it's like, you know, because I don't really do that much stuff in the press now. You just realize how much bullshit is out there.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like, it couldn't have been more antithetical to what I actually said. It was like, I called one friend of mine at one of the big, you know, entertainment industry blogs, which shall remain nameless. And I was like, dude, this is not at all what I said. Your printing is basically the opposite of what I said. He's like, I don't care.
It's
a good
we
story.
Get traffic. We're getting hits. We're making money.
Exactly.
They don't give a shit.
But the thing is, this isn't the first time a third film has been mentioned, because I don't know how many years back I had heard that you and Keanu Reeves had discussed an idea about waiting till you were like in your late 40s, early 50s.
Look,
is that true too?
All four of us are really good friends. You know, me and Keanu and Chris and Ed are all really good friends. We talk all the time. So, you know, if Keanu's in an interview and they're like Bill and Ted 3 and we just happen to have been like fucking around with some dumb idea, he will say that in an interview and then the internet goes wild.
It's become like canon.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, people
but
are
to
waiting.
Be fair to Reeves, what he might have said was, no, absolutely not, it will never happen. That turned into, me and Al were talking about Bill and Ted
last
week.
We're gonna be lounge lizards and Hitler's gonna be in it.
That's right.
It's gonna be fun.
Yeah.
So as of right now, final word on Bill and Ted 3, we've got the source to quiet the internet.
No comment.
Ooh. Well, then how about a follow-up question? Will
dude,
you come
I'm
back
in show business.
Show?
Do you really think that I tell the truth?
Who are you,
how
sir?
How did you assume that the thing I told the kid wasn't bullshit?
My entire world
how's
is thrown
How's that for
into
an enigma
season?
Wrapped in a mystery, wrapped in a riddle? Where is the truth?
I have another question from
you
the
You can't even handle the truth.
I have another question from the audience, from my good friend Ryan Gates. What happened to the phone booth?
Which one? Oh, the one we shot with?
Yeah.
Oh, hell, I don't know, man. I mean, that thing
used
was
in some other movie or just, it was just.
Oh, he means actual phone booths.
All right. Yes. Okay. As the foremost world authority on phone booths.
He doesn't work for the phone company. No, but that's actually, it's funny you bring that up though, because, we'll wrap it up soon, but the other big thing on the internet recently, and another big franchise from the same time period, was Back to the Future. And everyone has been saying, Justin Bieber, Back to the Future reboot remake,
God.
Which I, yeah. what are your feelings on someone rebooting the Bill and Ted franchise?
Well, they talked about doing it. I mean, you can't stop this shit. You know what I mean? They made a series. They made that god-awful live-action series of Bill and Ted. You can't stop it. You know, I mean, I didn't enjoy walking down like the, you know, the aisles of my local Safeway and finding my face on a cereal box. So, you know,
I would have loved it. I'd be like, I'm getting that cereal.
Exactly.
Just stare at myself while I eat.
I'm gonna eat me all day long.
I'll be like, look at you eating.
But it's you can't stop. I mean, you know, it would be sad for it to happen, but. I mean, a lot of people, you know, someone asked me this about The Gate the other day. Like, you know, a lot of people love the original movie. They want to make sure you don't fuck it up. And I was like, look, with all due respect, it's like, you know, and this is how I feel about it, about other Bill and Ted's or other these DVD The Lost Boys or whatever. It's like, I really couldn't give a shit. I mean, the originals, it's not like someone takes the original and sticks it in a vault. You can't watch it anymore.
It's not like we're Lucas-ing
you know?
This shit.
I mean, it's like, yeah, exactly. It's like, right.
He's like, and how I originally tended was instead of Rufus, it was a Dewback. And Jabba the Hutt played Joan of Arc. Thank you. Fuck off. Buy the toys.
I mean, people get so freaked out about this shit. And it's like, you know, like good examples like there was that Let the Right One In, that movie that came out, right?
Oh, yeah. People.
And then they made this new one, And I was looking at the trailer for it, and I was like, it's exactly the fucking same as the other one.
Yeah. Exact fucking.
And like, and I'm getting so much heat lately in the press from people like, oh, you better not mess with the original gate. I'm like, why the fuck would I make the gate exactly like the original gate?
You're like, exactly. I'm not Gus Van Sant. I'm not doing a shot-for-shot remake.
What would be the point of making the movie exactly like the other movie?
You just
no, this movie is not going to be like the original gate.
You
should live
just,
with it.
You should just fuck with people and be like, yeah, it's the exact same, and we're getting Stephen Dorff to reprise the role as the kid.
Exactly.
Time machines are involved. So, go
like,
with me.
So if they come and they make a reboot, like, you know, you think about it, these reboots, they come so fast. Like, I remember the other day I was, like, looking at, I was watching The Little Rascals with my kid. I was like, I wonder why no one's done The Little Rascals. Like,
they
oh,
totally,
I guess they did.
They totally did, yeah.
I mean, who fucking cares? It's like, if it's not going to be any good or it's going to be generic, it won't stand the test of time. It'll go as fast as it comes out, and it's like, it doesn't matter. I just don't think it matters. It's a shame, I think, if they reboot it, because it won't have, you know, the language.
But he's right, though. There are no fucking phone booths. What, would they be on iPhones and everyone hold hands or something?
Like, someone gave me the script of the reboot. There was a script of a Bill and Ted reboot, and I just didn't have the energy to read it. But someone told me that it was they go through a cell phone, which I thought was like the most lazy ass.
Yeah. It was like, well, there's no phone booth, so let's have them use a cell phone. Yeah.
It doesn't make like, any sense. How would station
they couldn't even
fit
get past
a cell phone?
Exactly. So I don't know. I mean, you know, if we did another one, I would just bring back a phone booth. I mean, whatever.
Yeah. You're like, we kept in our garage. Because
we're lazy, yeah.
Well, yeah.
You still got the phone booth.
They had them in the Bill and Ted future.
Yeah.
Because they made them, you know, like...
Thanks. It's now been justified. That answers your question. It got justified
here
tonight.
There we go. Now that it's scientifically proven from the Bill and Ted future. It's like, wait, shouldn't you be in the band right now, actually?
That's right. I should, yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Actor. I forgot. I'm so sorry, dude. Thank you for joining us, buddy. That was a lot of fun. And we would thank you, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
And we would... Anytime you would ever want to come back, we would love to have you, sir.
Cool.
Talk about some more stuff. Brendo, we would be remiss if we don't do this week because we keep forgetting. Folks, thank you for listening to Bag and Border. You can check me out on Twitter at Cameltoad. Brendo.
I'm Brendo Man. You can also check me out on BraxComic.com.
That's right. And make sure to subscribe to the Bagged and Boarded on iTunes. Check out BaggedBoarded.com, FredEntertainment.com, Smodcast.com. Come out and see us again real soon, folks. I'm Matt Cohen.
I'm Brenda Creasy.
It's been Bagged and Boarded. It's been real. What?
Find more funny shit like this at Smodcast.com. Scott, we ain't the only game in town. There's lots of other funny stuff going on at the Smodcast Podcast Network.
For sure.
So why the fuck are people just listening to this show? Go listen to the rest.
Listen to the rest.
You know why? It's all fucking free.
It's all
you know
free.
Why else? Every day of the week.
7 days a week.
For the shadow.
Absolutely, man. This is the Green Hornet time where it's just like, and then the Green Hornet entered the room.
Hello.
See how riveting that shit is? That's what's happening all the time at Smodcast.com. It's theater of the mind.
People entering.
People come in. People say shit. People leave. That's as gripping as it gets. That's the beginning of drama, Scott.
Yeah.
Smodcast.com. It's all free. It's all funny. It's monsters of talk.
There's so many to choose from.